Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
How's it going, everybody? I'm Ben Dubose. This is Locked On Rockets, your only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. It's All-Star Sunday, which means in just a few hours, James Harden's going to be taking the court in New Orleans as a starter for the Western Conference All-Star team. That will be fun. More importantly, now that it's Sunday, it's the week of the trade deadline. You know executives have had face-to-face discussions in New Orleans, but the NBA wants the focus to be on the All-Star events this weekend. After the game tonight, I'd say starting Monday, and especially Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, you're going to hear a lot of trade rumors, hopefully involving the Rockets, so we're going to have a lot to talk about in the days ahead, because finally, it's trade deadline week. I think the odds are pretty good that the Rockets at least do something. As far as the magnitude, we'll see in just a few days. We'll have that covered, of course, in the days to come. For now, most of the NBA media is still in New Orleans covering all of the events, but starting Monday and the rest of the week, I think we'll have a lot more interview-based shows in which we get into the trade deadline exploration angle. As far as what's going on with the Rockets now, first and foremost, as you guys probably know by now, Eric Gordon won the three-point shootout on Saturday evening. A really star-studded field beat Kyrie Irving in the finals, also beat Klay Thompson in prior rounds, Wes Matthews, absolutely loaded field, and Eric was the winner. And yes, of course, it's symbolic that the winner of a three-point contest had to be someone from the Houston Rockets. That's only fitting given the way they play. Beyond that, though, yes, I do think there's some value in seeing how a guy plays on that stage. Someone asked me last night on Twitter if I thought there's more pressure in a three-point shootout than a regular season NBA game. Absolutely. From a magnitude standpoint, the bright lights are on every single player. He knows everybody in the league is watching. People all over the world is watching. No, it's not a game. But at the same time, it's an event in which some of the biggest stars, the biggest names in the game are playing. And so, yeah, there's a lot of pressure. And I said the same thing 2 years ago when Pat Beverly won the skills competition. Does it really mean that much in terms of Pat Beverly being a skills champ or Eric Gordon being the best three-point shooter on the planet? No, because, of course, in a setting like that, there are minor differences in your form. You're not going to shoot six balls off a rack from one spot and then move to four others in an NBA game. So you can't just say, well, Eric Gordon did that, so he's the best game shooter in the NBA. No, I'm not arguing that, just I wouldn't say that Pat Beverly is the most skilled player in the NBA. But what I would say is that it shows that players like Pat Beverly, like Eric Gordon, are wired in such a way that they do not shrink from the moment. And that has value. I'm not going to sit here and say it proves that Eric's slump is over, because really, if you want some perspective, keep in mind that going into this three-point shootout, Gordon has not really shot the ball from three that well for the past month. Now, a lot of it might be injury-related. We know he's had the back issue, also tweaks to his toe and his ankle. So some of it might be injury-related. But no, I would even say he's back to where he was in November and December. The one thing I would say is it proves that he is someone that, well, succeeds when the lights are brightest. And I think there's value in that as you get closer to the playoffs. And, well, playoffs is the theme that I really wanted to make this show about. Because, as I said leading off, we don't really have any interviews yet because most of the media is in New Orleans. And, well, we also don't have trade rumors because those are going to come out later in the week. It's the Sunday. There's no games. Haven't been a game since Wednesday. There's not going to be a game until this Thursday. So we're right at the midpoint of these eight consecutive off days. And so I thought this was a good point to look at where the Rockets are big picture. We spend so much time on this daily podcast breaking down game by game. Take a step back, big picture, and then analyze what it means for the playoffs moving forward. So the Rockets, of course, at the All-Star break, they're 40-18, third seed in the West, a four-game lead over the Clippers, a four-and-a-half-game lead over the Jazz. But really, that three seed has kind of been their equilibrium. That's where they've been, really, for two-plus months now. They're not quite at the Spurs level for number two, certainly not at the Warriors level for one, but at the same time, they also have not come very close, even when they lost 8 of 13 games in January, to falling to the 4 or 5 spot. And so now they're at a point, they're 4 games back of the Spurs for the 2, and they're also 4 games up of the Clippers for 4, who are at the 4 spot. So it's pretty clear to me that the 3 is overwhelmingly likely where they kind of fit in the hierarchy of the Western Conference. Now, it's not to say that they couldn't fall. The Clippers are only 3 games back in the loss column. The Rockets do have a very difficult schedule in March, so it's possible that maybe they slump a little bit and someone makes a run. It's also not impossible that they catch the Spurs. The Spurs have not played their best ball of late, so I wouldn't put it past the Rockets to make a run for the 2 seed if all goes well. But I think we can agree on a couple of things. They're not going to be the 1, they're not going to be the 8, and I also don't think they're going to fall to the 7, because for the Rockets to fall from 3 to 7, not only would they have to just have a cataclysmic collapse, but 4 separate teams, the Clippers, the Jazz, the Grizzlies, and the Thunder, would all have to get hot almost simultaneously and all pass the Rockets. I think what's likely, we can agree, the Rockets are going to be somewhere in the 2 through 6 range. Probably the 2 through 5 is more realistic. And of course, the 3 is the overwhelming likelihood. But if we agree the Rockets are not going to catch the Warriors for 1, and they're also not going to just completely collapse in these final 24 games and fall to 7 or 8, then essentially that gives the Rockets 4 possible playoff opponents: the Clippers, the Jazz, the Grizzlies, and the Thunder. I'm excluding the Spurs from that list because I don't see any scenario where the Rockets and Spurs both collapse to where neither gets the 2 seed. And if that's the scenario, then you'd have to fall to the 7 for that to be a probable matchup. And that seems incredibly far-fetched to me. So I wanted to break down my thoughts on those 4 because I've seen a lot of people talking matchups of late. Specifically during the Miami game, and I touched on this a bit with Ali Vajani the other day, I saw a lot of people drawing comparisons between the Heat and Grizzlies and about how that style would be a negative for the Rockets in the playoffs. And I disagree with that a lot because the Grizzlies do not have anyone who is athletic and big enough to the extent that Hassan Whiteside is. Marc Gasol is a very good center, but he's a different type of center. And furthermore, up and down the roster, the Grizzlies do not have the athleticism that Miami does. But I thought that was a good starting point for a podcast to break down how I see these 4 potential Rockets matchups in the playoffs, assuming no just stunning collapse or them winning 20 in a row, something ridiculous like that. And hell, even if they do, I still don't think that's enough to catch the Warriors. The Rockets are 9 games back of the Warriors in the loss column right now. So, looking at the 4 realistic possibilities, the Grizzlies, Thunder, Clippers, and Jazz, I'm going to go in order of who I would most like to play and who I would least like to play. Far and away, number one, the team I would most like to play is the Memphis Grizzlies. And I know there's a bit of a narrative for some on Twitter. Some are going to recoil and say, oh, this is the perfect foil to D'Antoni ball because these are the grinding Grizzlies. They slow it down. They make it ugly. Oh, and the Rockets are 1-2 against them this year. Look at the games. Folks, you can't just look at the record and say, well, the Rockets won against this team and they lost this team and draw any conclusions. Because over 82 games, things happen. You're going to be on your 4th game in 5 nights in some circumstances. Otherwise, the other team is going to be on that stretch. You're going to be playing cold as the Rockets were in January, or it might be like they were in December, winning 10 in a row. Over an 82-game schedule, there are all sorts of peaks and valleys, so you can't just look at any one or two games and draw a conclusion. Now, you can if there are certain trends that match up with, say, the talent distribution of the two teams. As I said, to go back to the Miami example, when the same thing happens twice and it kind of meshes with something you see as a potential weakness, then yeah, it might be fair to worry a little bit about how these two teams match up. But you can't just look at the box score and say, well, the Rockets are 1-2 against this team, 2-1 against another, and draw any conclusions. For example, the Rockets are both 1-1 against the LA Lakers and the Golden State Warriors. Would we say that their chances are equal at beating the Lakers and the Warriors? No. Stuff happens. For starters, that Lakers loss was the first game of the season back in October. But I mention all of this to get back to the point of Memphis, which is to say that the 2 losses the Rockets had, the fact that they're 1-2, they don't scare me at all. As far as the 2 losses the Rockets had, one 115-109, that was back in December. Other was 110-105, that was in January. First, both of those 2 losses came without Clint Capella. So being without your starting center against a team whose best player is Marc Gasol, yeah, that absolutely matters. Secondly, look at those box scores. The game the Rockets lost in Memphis, the Grizzlies shot 52% from three. The game the Rockets lost to the Grizzlies in Houston, the Rockets shot 24% from three, even worse than that in the second half. And Tony Allen, of all people, scored 22 points on like 80% shooting. And then the final game of the three, of course, the Rockets beat the Grizzlies 119-95, just an absolute beatdown in Memphis on the second night of a back-to-back. So for all the concern about style, pace, that sort of stuff, in all three games against Memphis, the Rockets scored 105 or more points. The last game, on the road in Memphis, they absolutely demolished them. The two games they lost had all sorts of bizarre stuff going on. Memphis shooting 52% from three in one game. Guys, if you shoot better than 50% from three, you're going to win most nights in the NBA. That's just the way it works. I don't care who the teams are. And then the Rockets shooting uncharacteristically poor. Clint Capella missing both of those games. Tony Allen having basically the best offensive game of his career. This is flukish stuff. There is nothing in those three games at Memphis, when you look at the specifics of how they played out, that has me concerned about their style being the perfect foil for D'Antoni Ball. As far as what happened losing two games, that just falls into the category of, well, stuff happens over an 82-game season. There's nothing that makes me feel like that it's a throw-out-the-records matchup. Because the Rockets are better than the Grizzlies for a reason, and my feelings on the Rockets and the Grizzlies, I just don't see Memphis having the firepower to keep up with Houston in a seven-game series. I know they've upset the Spurs back in, what, 2011, which, by the way, that's 6 years ago. But there's a reason that they're not starting Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol anymore. Zach Randolph is 35 years old and coming off the bench. This is not the team they were 4 or 5 years ago. They can't play that way in the modern NBA, especially not against a team with the pace and the tempo of the Houston Rockets. Now, if you want to make a case for Memphis, maybe if Chandler Parsons gets more healthy, and I think that's a long shot, but if Parsons gets more healthy, maybe by the playoffs they're a more dangerous team than people give them credit for. I think seeing Chandler Parsons not only play major minutes, but go from being one of the worst rotation players in the league, which he is now, to a true impact, that seems far-fetched. That's the only scenario I can come up with. As far as the pace being the perfect foil, I don't buy that talk at all. The Rockets have too much firepower, and like I said, there's a reason the Grizzlies don't start Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph anymore. That style does not really work in the modern NBA, especially with the declining athleticism of both of those guys, but especially Randolph, who's 35 years old. Over the course of seven games, I do not see a scenario, barring injury, where the Grizzlies have enough firepower to keep up with the Rockets. So that's my most favorite matchup. Second most favorite, Oklahoma City. I know a lot of folks would rather play them rather than Memphis, and right now, I believe Memphis is ahead of Oklahoma City in the standings. They are by a game and a half. But for me personally, I'm a bit more concerned about Oklahoma City, and here's why. All three of those games, I know the Rockets are 2-1, but all three of those games followed the same exact formula. The Rockets struggled mightily for points in the fourth quarter. Russell Westbrook brought the Thunder back from a deficit, and every one of them was a coin flip game going to the last 1 or 2 minutes. It's not a matchup where, well, the Grizzlies-Rockets, where one game somebody shoots over 50% from three, and then someone ridiculous like Tony Allen goes off. There's nothing like that. All three games followed a remarkably similar formula. And so I think it's fair to say that the length the Thunder have, and it starts with Andre Roberson, causes James Harden some issues. I don't think it's something that he can't overcome, but I do think that length is a problem. I don't think the Rockets get the same quality of looks that they get against a lot of other teams. And then you combine that with the individual brilliance of Russell Westbrook. I do think James Harden is the MVP. I do think he's overall a slightly better player and more valuable player than Russell Westbrook is. However, at any given moment, Russell Westbrook can flip the switch and be the best player on a basketball floor. And that's scary. If the Rockets play Memphis, there is no doubt James Harden is the best player on the floor. If the Rockets play Oklahoma City, James Harden's probably the best player, but there are going to be stretches when Russell Westbrook gets it going, and if you combine that with a defense that has a little bit of length and gets the Rockets out of sorts a bit, and then you have Westbrook for just have one of those stretches for a quarter or two where he just goes off, that all of a sudden can keep them in a game. The ultimate trump card that the Rockets have in most of their matchups in the playoffs is that with James Harden, they have the best player on the floor at all times. That's something they can't really say with Oklahoma City, so that's why I would rather play Memphis combination of Memphis not having that dynamic player like Westbrook that can almost single-handedly turn a game by himself if he gets hot. And also, I'm not seeing anything from Memphis defensively that makes me think there's a consistent issue for Houston. Whereas when the Rockets have played Oklahoma City, there have been some issues on the offense and the floor that have been basically the same for all three games. Now, I still think the Rockets would be heavy favorites over Oklahoma City in the series. There's no excuse to lose. I'm just saying I would personally rather play Memphis than Oklahoma City for those reasons. Now, getting to the last two, I will say there is a huge gap, in my opinion, between Memphis and Oklahoma City and then the Clippers and the Jazz. So that's why if the standings stay as they are with the Clippers and Jazz as the 4-5 right now, that's why it's so important for the Rockets to stay in the top three of the Western Conference, because you avoid those two teams. Because the Grizzlies and the Thunder, the Jazz and the Clippers, there's only a slight difference in the standings of, you know, a couple of games between that grouping. But yeah, in terms of matchups, I don't like the latter two at all. I'll say my third most preferred matchup would be the Jazz, but boy, it's tough. As I said last week, the Jazz remind me an awful lot of the Miami Heat in that you have Rudy Gobert playing the role of Hassan Whiteside. The Jazz also play at the slowest pace in the NBA. So for a lot of people that are worried about Memphis, I think Utah is the team you should actually worry about in terms of there being an ideal style to kind of be the foil to what Mike D'Antoni likes to play with his pace. Because the Jazz, with Rudy Gobert, it's the slowest pace in the league. They're one of the few teams that has gone out and dominated the Rockets this year. That was that game in Utah at the end of November. And the Rockets were playing well then. The very next game after that, the Rockets went out and won in Golden State. So that was one of the few games that kind of stuck with me because of the way the Jazz were just able to grind the Rockets to a halt. And you could make an argument that it's going to be tough. The one game that the Rockets did beat the Jazz, they're 1-1 this year, was in November. Clint Capella was absolutely enormous that game. 20 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. And that's the kind of production the Rockets would need, in my opinion, to beat Rudy Gobert and the Utah Jazz in the playoffs. Is it feasible? Sure it is. Clint's had some very high highs, but you're going to be putting an awful lot of responsibility on him on both ends of the court if you draw that particular matchup. The reason I don't have the Jazz last, though, they have a lot of really nice pieces, but Gordon Hayward, Rudy Gobert, none of those guys are the true alpha dog that strikes fear into the heart of the other team. They pose some matchup problems for Houston, very similar to what Miami does. That's why I think they're clearly much more difficult than Memphis or Oklahoma City. However, James Harden would be the best player on the floor at all times, and so that has value. The Jazz as a team do a lot of things that could give the Rockets trouble, but in a half-court setting, late in games, the Rockets have the kind of individual difference maker that the Jazz simply do not. So that's why, to me, while the Jazz are a difficult matchup, certainly more so than Memphis or Oklahoma City, they're not the most difficult matchup of the four. The most difficult matchup of the four, in my opinion, is the LA Clippers. And I know a lot of people are going to say that they disagree because the Rockets have beaten the Clippers in the playoffs before. They also gave them a beatdown earlier this year, although that was without Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. My thing on the Clippers, it's less about how they match up with the Rockets and more about their sense of urgency in general. I don't think people around the league fully appreciate just how big of a postseason it's going to be for the LA Clippers. With Chris Paul and Blake Griffin both about to become free agents this summer, well, they have the option to, and pretty much everyone becomes a free agent that can, because of the new cap environment and the ability to get paid. But really, this is a veteran core with the Clippers, the Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan era. They've been together for several years now, and if it doesn't work for them this year, I don't know how you mount an argument that it can. Because you're at a point now, especially with Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, they're entering a phase of their careers. I don't necessarily say that they're going to be entering a huge decline, but they're not going to have this organic growth. If it hasn't happened by now, it may never happen. So I think you're going to be a scenario with the Clippers where if it doesn't work out, they're absolutely going to be considering other options, much the same way Kevin Durant did after Oklahoma City lost in the playoffs last year. So what does that mean? I think everyone on that Clipper team is going to approach this coming postseason, assuming they're healthy, with an incredible sense of urgency. It's basically do or die for the entire generation of the franchise, and every single one of them knows it. First off, from a best player on the floor standpoint, whereas the Rockets would have that advantage against the Jazz, they wouldn't necessarily against the Clippers. Yes, I think James Harden is better than Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, in a vacuum over the course of 82 games. However, Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, they have the ability at any given moment to flip the switch, and all it takes in a 7-game series is for that to come at the wrong time, and that can single-handedly turn a series. Beyond that, it's just simply my personal hunch that the Clippers are going to play well in this postseason. I think they're going to win their first round matchup, and assuming that's the 4-5, I actually think they're going to take at least 2 games from the Warriors in round 2. Now, I'm not saying they're going to beat the Warriors, but I'm saying there is a lot to be said when an NBA team gets in that do-or-die mindset, and I think the sense of urgency, the Clippers have a lot of proud veterans, Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, they got a proven coach in Doc Rivers. They are going to be essentially like a wounded dog because they all know what's coming this summer, assuming they fall in the playoffs to the Warriors or, well, to anybody else. So I think they're going to be playing with an incredibly high sense of urgency. You have 3 legitimate all-star talents around them. Of course, you still have veteran proven role players, J.J. Redick, Jamal Crawford, et cetera, around them. Again, I don't think they're going to win a ring, and ultimately I do think they're probably going to break up this summer. I'm just saying I personally would not be in favor of playing them in the playoffs because I know they're going to play hard to a level like a few other teams will. And then the other thing, look at their record in the context of how many injuries they've had. Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, both have had very extended absences this year. And yet the Clippers are just, they're still 35-21, only 4 games behind the Rockets, just 3 in the loss column. So yeah, they're just 35-21, which at first glance doesn't seem that scary. But when you consider they have this record, despite tons of major injuries to their core, it has to make you think that, well, if that core gets healthy by playoff time, especially if they get healthy a little bit before and can build some chemistry going in, they are not a team that I would want to face. I'd also say they're not as good defensively, certainly, as the likes of the Jazz or Grizzlies. However, they can pose some of the same problems because DeAndre Jordan does have a very similar skill set to the likes of Rudy Gobert or Hassan Whiteside. Now, the Clippers, they don't have the overall depth of athletes that these other teams do, so I don't think it's quite the same challenge. However, I do think just based on DeAndre alone, that has potential to cause a lot of problems, much the same way we've seen guys like Hassan Whiteside and Rudy Gobert almost single-handedly own the Rockets on the interior. So while the Jazz are a better defensive team, the margin between the Jazz and the Clippers on that end is not strong enough to where I throw out the Clippers' advantage in terms of the sense of urgency, the amount of all-stars on that roster. The Clippers, to me, are the last team that I would want to see. So to wrap up, the 4 teams the Rockets are likely to play, my ranking of who I'd most want to face to the least, Memphis, Oklahoma City, the Utah Jazz, and then the LA Clippers. And the big takeaway for me as I went through this, it's not just the list of teams 1 through 4, it's the huge gap between 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. Even though it doesn't look like it in the standings between the Jazz and Clippers at 4-5 and the Grizzlies Thunder at 6-7, it's huge, in my opinion, to the potential matchup with the Rockets. So that absolutely shows you just how important it is for the Rockets to stay in that 3 spot, assuming that the gap between the Clippers and Jazz and the Grizzlies and Thunder stays in place. Then, yeah, being a top 3 seed is absolutely a very big deal for the Rockets, because not only do you get on the other side of the bracket from the Warriors for the 2nd round, that's a big deal, but you also get a much more favorable matchup for the 1st round against a team that, while there are no gimmies, any of these teams has the potential to beat the Rockets in the series. The Rockets are not so good that you can say, well, it would take something crazy for them to lose. No, any of those teams can beat them if the stars align, but there's a big gap between the 6-7 tier and the 4-5. So if the Rockets stay in that top 3, they get a favorable matchup in the 1st round, and you avoid the Warriors in the 2nd round. So yes, there's a lot to play for when the Rockets get back on the floor for these final 24 games starting Thursday night in New Orleans. Anyway, I'll wrap it there. Thanks to all of you guys for listening. Again, I'm Ben Dubose. This is Locked on Rockets, your only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. You can follow me on Twitter, @BenDubose. You can follow the show on Twitter, @LockedOnRockets. You can also find us, subscribe to us, rate us, pretty much anywhere you can listen to podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Audio Boom. Just search for Locked on Rockets. Also, don't hesitate to email us at LockedOnRockets@gmail.com if you've got questions for me, suggestions, or if you would like to inquire about becoming a potential sponsor of this rapidly growing program. As far as the rest of the week, tonight, of course, is the All-Star game. Enjoy that. James Harden's certainly going to get a lot of run as a starter for the Western Conference All-Star team. Then, starting tomorrow, I think we'll see the trade rumor mill crank up, and with the NBA media wrapping up their coverage from New Orleans. I think we'll have a lot more interviews in the days ahead leading up to the deadline, and hopefully some insight on what the Rockets are planning to do. As I told you guys last week, I also have an interview planned talking about the Rockets D-League performance this year. We never have time to really examine them, but in this kind of absence, this void of games, thought it was a good time to check in on Shinanu Anuaku, Kyle Wiltshire, and, well, other guys the Rockets have down with the Rio Grande Valley Vipers and see how they're doing. So the rest of this week, a lot of interviews on the trade deadline, also a little bit of D-League talk, and then, of course, the end of the week, Rockets, Pelicans, Thursday in New Orleans, will be back to basketball. For now, though, enjoy your time off. Enjoy the All-Star game tonight. I'll be back with you tomorrow, Monday, talking a little more trade deadline. For now, enjoy the rest of your weekend.